are live and on lockdown.
Are you ready?
Broadcasting from Edinburgh, Scotland and across the globe.
Listen here.
You're listening to Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast, the host Fraser Ramsey.
Hey, this is Afia Leatham, creator of the Frame Your Day app, helping you walk out every day in victory. I'm proud to be a sponsor of Ramsey Unleash, Going Beyond Borders.
Hi, this is Zakiya Ringgold from NaturalSoapByZakiya.com, proud sponsors of the Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast.
Good evening, afternoon, morning, wherever you are in the world. It's another edition to the Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast. It's been a wee while since the last one. Last one was actually the last day of the year. So back with another inspirational guest, another inspirational story, and for something that you would never expect from just a simple pill or tablet could cause a major life change in her life. We're going to dissect her story, obviously the before this all happened, and life in general. I'm guessing it'd be very just normal life. And then suddenly, after something that happened due to a simple process of medication, it basically caused a major stroke and a total turnaround in her life. So we'll dissect that on this podcast, and we look forward to hearing just the beginning, and obviously the trauma of literally being unable to basically move, do anything at all, so, and the rebuilding of her life. But I welcome my guest, Maria Garcia, all the way from New York, and thank you for being on the Ramsey Unleashed, Going Beyond Borders podcast. How are you doing?
Good, I'm great. Thank you for having me, Fraser.
So how's your day been? Been all right?
Pretty good. This morning it's very warm out, so I actually did a bit of hiking.
That's good. I wish it was warm over here. It's a little bit, been not too bad, but it's getting there. But I wish it was kind of. I wish we did have the American weather somehow in some ways, because when they get hot, you get hot. But when we kind of get hot, it's not quite that hot. But it is what it is. It's one of these things. So let's not be about the bush. Let's start and just let's get on with it, and let's get your story. So tell us about who you are, obviously about your life before all this happened, before you kind of had the stroke, before just education, where you're born, brought up, that kind of stuff, and just leading this jobs, education, your first job, and just how this kind of leading up to the stage of when you were obviously taking birth control medication and then the stroke happened. So we'll kind of build that foundation of your life up to that part, and you can tell us and go from there. So fire away.
Okay, so let's start from after college, because it was not long after. After college, I thought, I don't want to start my career just yet. What can I do? So I decided going to Germany was a great idea, because I'd studied finance, and I figured somewhere in my mind, since the euro is based on the mark, if I learn German, somehow one day it'll be to my benefit. So off I went to Germany. I ended up staying there 2 years. I didn't think I'd stay that long, but I did. And I worked as a waitress. I was going to school every day to learn German. And I even had a boyfriend. And that's where I started taking birth control, actually. And then when I came back 2 years later, I ended up getting a job relatively quickly in finance, and I was moving up the ranks. I was taking exams to become a stockbroker, and that was going to happen relatively soon. And 6 months into being back in the U.S., one morning, I went to my mom's house. It was our tradition to have family lunch, and we were there. Everything went great. After lunch, I went home. And all of a sudden, I was on the phone, and I started hearing, ksh, ksh. And it took me a second to realize, holy crap, that's actually my head. It's in my head. And I started seeing things like, the red ocean is underneath the kitchen floor. And I'm like, what? I couldn't believe I said that because it's not what I intended to say. Mm-hmm. And whenever I try to speak, the words would come out different.
Right, okay.
Than I thought them. And finally, I somehow got off the phone. I don't know how I was coherent enough to say I need to get off, but I was. And then I just fell on my bed in the fetal position. And I felt like somebody had hit me with a cast iron pan over the head. I had the worst thunderclap headache. And shortly thereafter, my friend who was in the other room came to check on me. And he saw what was going on and immediately alerted my mother. By this point, I had already vomited.
Mm-hmm.
And we all thought, oh man, she must have food poisoning. And I thought I probably had food poisoning as well.
Okay.
So they called the ambulance. The ambulance came. They looked me over. Somehow they were not alarmed. I was able to make sense at the time. And they ended up leaving. They actually left. And I kept getting progressively worse. So I ended up going with my family to the hospital. And I don't remember much of the ride there, other than there were feet of snow on the ground. We get to the hospital. We go to the emergency room. And then they make you wait in the emergency room, right? So there we are, sitting for 2 hours or something. I kept getting worse and worse. And then finally, I go in and they start running all these exams on me, CAT scans. And after a little while, they say, ma'am, we believe you've had a stroke. And I'm going, the first thing that went across my mind was, what's a stroke? I had no idea what a stroke was. I was 25 years old. I didn't know. The word was not even in my vocab.
So, carry on. I'm listening. It's a good story. I'm just here letting you dissect your story. Go for it.
And then with what I thought would be 2 weeks at the hospital turned into 4 months.
Wow.
4 months. And by the next morning, I was totally paralyzed from the eyes down, which means I was also a mute.
So from the eyes down, could you do any movement in your eyes at all?
I did, but people thought I was comatose and that was just involuntary.
Right, okay. So let's, within the space of being coming back from Germany, so let's get the backstory, which is like the prequel part. So you got that part there. So you went to Germany. What part of Germany did you go to?
I was in Munich.
Munich. Oh, that's good. My niece and husband lived in Munich. So what year was that when you went to Munich?
2001.
2001. So that's that must have been what year, what month? Because that would have been roughly around 2001, September 11th, especially when that happened, you know?
Oh, wait, 2000. What year did I graduate college? Yeah, it must have been 2001.
2001.
Right after. It was like November.
November, right. So it's right after 9/11. Interesting. So basically, it was just January, but you decided to, is it like after you graduated or sort of before you get a full-time job, just go for let's take a break, do some traveling, and obviously taking birth control medication. So let's go a bit further back. So tell us about your growing up life. Tell us about how was it? Tell us about your the school life in general, what you did, and obviously before you graduated, and just to dissect a little bit more of the background.
Okay. I was actually born in Spain.
Wow. So I was wondering about your name. I thought, okay, where was the name? Because I think Garcia. Okay. We are streaming live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. This is a podcast, obviously, all the audio purposes for what we're doing. interviewing Maria Garcia, all the way from New York, originally from Spain, which I just found out there, which is hence the name. I just want to say hi to the people here watching on Facebook. Is a guy called Gary Lautis, who's in Edinburgh as well, saying hello. So thank you. Hello, Gary. But also, let's for those who are listening on the audio purpose, but we're going to carry on dissecting her story, because it's very interesting to suddenly go from taking medication to having a full-blown stroke. So we're going to, but we're just doing the background. So, yeah, so Spain, tell us about what part of Spain were you originally from?
I do know Santiago de Compostela. Maybe if I tell you soccer, Coruña. Deportivo.
I know, I've heard of Deportivo because of football wise, but.
That's right. Galicia, so it's northwestern Spain.
Okay, nice. So, what brought you, how did you end up in New York or America?
You know, my parents, that's how I ended up here. I didn't want to come. I was 6 years old. They told me at six, oh, we're leaving, by the way. And I thought, oh my God, my world is ending.
So he just suddenly did up sticks and said, we're leaving. That was it. Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much.
So life in New York. So how was it? As you're obviously 6 years old, tell us about your self-experience and just starting a whole new, obviously cultural difference from Spain to America. How did you adapt and tell us about that?
You know, it was very, for me, it was very strange because it was culture shock. I was used to playing outside every day. We were from a very, very small village. Now we're in the city. And I was coming from being outside morning to night. And all of a sudden, I wasn't outside at all. And I vomited every day before school for like 2 months. I was not happy. And I would always dream that Spain was around the corner, that I could just walk.
So, I suppose it's one way of saying you're allergic to school if you're just being sick every morning. That's one way of doing it. So, when does school, did you get over the, obviously, you went primary school, whatever, the system's different in America than it is over here in Spain, probably. So, what was the kind of general, you studied, you obviously got over it eventually, and you went to high school, whatever, and then you eventually. What made you decide what college? You know, deciding college. Just tell us about your life in New York as you got used to it from being in Spain, sunny Spain, out every day to suddenly in the big bad concrete city of New York. You know.
Yeah, it was very different. And one story that I remember all the time is my first day of school here when I was six. The teacher says in Spanish because I had a bilingual teacher. She says, oh, we have a new student. Her name is Maria. And I'm going, Maria? Who is Maria? And I didn't know she meant me because in Spain, I go by my middle name. And nobody had ever called me Maria until that day. So I find that.
What's your middle name?
Begonia.
Begonia. Ah, very nice. Ah, very nice. Very interesting. So I'll see you always. That's good. A lot of people, I suppose some people do, you go by the middle name in life. Like my middle name's Kenneth, so I could have done that, but I go by Fraser. So my Kenneth as well. But it's interesting. So yeah, so just what college did you graduate into? What was the college, university?
I went to Manhattan College, and that's in northern New York. And they're studying finance. I did really, really well in school.
That's cool. How long was the course at Manhattan College?
That was 4 years.
4 years, and you graduated. Yeah, I mean, so Germany, obviously Munich, you travelled because of what you've been doing. You stayed a couple of years in Germany, you said. You met somebody, obviously birth control, but I mean, was it birth control medication you'd had from America, or was it birth control you got from Germany? Or
I actually started taking in Germany.
In Germany. So did you ever, looking at the point of when you've had this stroke, and looking back, this is obviously going forward, but did you ever do the research? Did you ever find it exactly? Do you think what may have triggered from the medication to causing the stroke?
it's pretty much known that birth control, or that what they told me in the hospital was birth control would have been the only risk factor, right? And then I later found out that that particular pill increased the chance of stroke threefold. So it's already a risk with any birth control. But that specific one had a threefold risk over the others.
Okay.
Which I did not know at the time, of course.
So you may, if you'd known, you would have potentially taken a different tablet, potentially.
I didn't know your stroke was even a risk for any of them.
Good, but all right, okay. So I suppose you don't really expect to have a stroke. I'm guessing, I mean, early 20s, we're kind of?
25 years old.
25, so you wouldn't expect you'd be having that any time, yes. Okay. So let's go back to, let's go forward again into the, you're in hospital and you're now paralysed from the eyes down, and let's dissect the progress of you getting back to where you, obviously where you are now. But tell us your journey, because the first day of finally waking up and realising you're mute, you can think and you can see, but you can't do anything and you can't communicate. I mean, that must have been some serious shock to the system, and not knowing, you just physically can't do anything. So just tell us what you're feeling. You're kind of tell us what was going through your head, really.
That was a nightmare. I can't even say it any other way. I can't describe the feeling because I don't think anybody will relate to the feeling. It was like being trapped in my own body. And I was tremendously scared. I was scared is a big one. I was frustrated because I didn't understand what was happening. And just fear, so much fear.
How old were you when the stroke happened?
I'm sorry?
How old were you when the stroke happened?
25 years old.
25 again, so it was the same time. And how, so just tell us the dissected day-to-day recovery of the treatment, obviously, what they had, the rehab, and what they were doing to you to get you to break the cycle, obviously, of what was going through your body.
Well, first at the first hospital, the one where I was at, for 2 months, they weren't really doing much other than giving me more tablets, and I don't remember much else. I did have a breathing tube for a while, which they didn't give me for a month. So at 1 month, I sat there with the tube in my mouth, and that was extremely uncomfortable. And what I do remember is my family, which was, wow. When I look back on it, I think if it were not for them, I would not be here. They made shifts so somebody would be with me 24 hours a day. My brother would come in. I think I'm frozen.
No, you're okay. You're moving. You're all good. Carry on.
Every day when my brother came in, he would move my legs up and down and my arms. And just initial movement is really crucial. And nobody at the hospital was giving me any therapy. Just what he was doing.
Okay. So when did you start to sort of show signs of improvement as this was all going on down the line?
I would say the first sign of movement was I moved my index finger 1 centimeter up. That was my first movement after about 2 weeks.
2 weeks, that's good going. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm guessing your family helping you move and keeping things, so you're obviously not getting, not stopping completely. So I'm guessing, doing that is obviously what's helped getting it, the brain function, basically try to reconnect with the body again, if you know what I mean. I'm guessing that's because you're moving and doing something, you know. So after your index finger being moved, just tell us the story, how it kind of unfolded, because I'm guessing with your finger moving, it would mean something else gradually moving and so on and so on.
Yeah, it was all very, very gradual. Started with the finger, then the rest of the arm, little by little. And that's how it was for 2 months. Then at the second hospital, where was that? Another 2 months. That was more like a therapy hospital.
Okay.
And they give me therapy 3 hours a day.
What was the therapy like? What were they doing with you?
Physical therapy.
Or physical?
Physical therapy and a little bit of speech therapy, but I really could not talk at all until the trach was removed. And even when it was removed, I could say maybe one word.
Okay. What was the word that you could say?
Oh, I don't recall. Maybe no. Or ice cream, because I always want.
How, just psychologically going through this as you're gradually getting better, I know it's a nightmare, but how psychologically has it affected you during, just obviously going through physical therapy is not easy in the best of times. The physical therapy, obviously, it's tiring, and especially when your body is not really doing anything, it's hard that you're pushing your body when it's not responding. How does it affect you psychologically in your head and your, did you go through any depression? Did you go through anything? It must be very low.
Yeah, psychologically, I was destroyed. I was put on Prozac. I don't know if you guys know what that is. That's an antidepressant. I was just done. I didn't have any hope. And I think the thing that finally started to lift the depression was that I began doing yoga after being home for some time. And that started to lift the mental clouds, if you want to put it that way.
Okay. Have you ever had have you ever had like a faith in your life or anything, or especially something in Spain? I suppose it's more of a Catholic background, I suppose. Did you, anything like that at all help you in your progress?
I would say that when I had the stroke after, I turned more into spirituality. I had faith. I was a Catholic, but I was a Catholic in name. I mean, I didn't really have religious vocation.
Okay. So going forward, just tell us about dissect more of your progress and of the journey of getting back into pretty much your full body movement.
It was very slow, the therapy. Well, it took me about 8 years of therapy to get to a plateau, right? And when I got to that plateau, I was maybe at 70%. And that this included me joining the gym, me working out all day. At the very first, when I first got home, I was so weak. And I when I thought I'd be running by then, I actually went home in a wheelchair.
Right.
In a wheelchair. But then because the wheelchair didn't fit through any of my doorways, that's when I graduated to using a walker.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to think of what questions to ask you. Usually I do it off the cuff, but obviously not knowing. Feel free to carry on just dissecting your story as you're proceeding, obviously a walker, and then going from there. Just tell us this on the journey, so I'm listening, basically.
Okay. The journey itself was very long, very frustrating. Like I said, it took me 8 years to get to maybe 70%. That was with lots of therapy. I learned how to swim or how to do real laps in the pool because I already knew how to swim previously. Although the first time I went in the pool, I sank like a rock.
I suppose it's you need movement, don't you? Basically, that's what you need.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had to relearn everything from scratch. I had to relearn to walk, had to relearn to talk, had to relearn to feed myself, and I even had to relearn how to use the bathroom because I had to wear diapers.
Right, okay. it can't have been easy, obviously losing your dignity in a sense of general normal routines from doing that, and you couldn't. So when did you start to sort of not be able to, when you had to stop wearing adult diapers, basically?
That took maybe a little less than a year after being home.
Okay.
But still the recovery went on. It was very long.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I do remember one story that when I got home, we had a bike at home, the kind where you sit. It's got like a chair. They call it the recumbent bikes. And my mom's like, you need to go on this bike. She takes me to the bike. Frasier, I put my feet on the pedals. My feet slipped right off. I wasn't even strong enough to keep my feet on the pedals. And what did my mom do? She tied my feet with a rope.
And she, wow.
Yeah.
And you're able to start your process in getting. Yeah. So while you're sort of going through this, and while you are obviously recovering, you're building your fitness and your strength up in movement, obviously it's percentage. You basically went from being eyes only and to then it went from an index finger. So obviously you have said before you got to 90% of your body movement back. So going through the weeks, obviously went from like 1% to 10, 5, 20, 30. As you started to get stronger, just tell us what did you were able to start to do more of, especially when it came to maybe work or obviously wanting to try and get back to work or keep your brain active in some way. But so you're not going totally doolally basically by doing nothing. So that tell us a bit more how you kind of coped in a day-to-day life as you were progressing.
I would say after about a year or 2 years is when I started really wanting to leave the house. And my first adventure was joining a gym. I really couldn't do much. I still needed to recover a lot. But that was a start. So I went to the gym. A few years later, I enrolled in a translation program. So I was translating from Spanish to English.
Okay. Did that online translation and basically just getting work just so you can do some work afterwards?
Yeah, it was online. I did take one class at the college, and that was basically my I consider it my first real step in the outside world. And it was crazy because I thought, oh my God, what are people thinking about me? I can't walk. I can't talk. It was, well, interesting to say the least.
So when did you start really getting at what point did you feel, it's probably around about the 70 or 80% mark of your movement back before, did you start to get work or start going? And when did you feel that what point did you hit the 90 bar? Do you think you'll ever get the 100% back in your life?
Yes, I do. I do. And I'll tell you the reason why I do. After maybe 5 years, I started going to look for volunteer opportunities, basically because I needed to get out of the house.
Okay.
And I did that for some time. Did a couple of different things, like there's a radio station in New York I volunteered for. I was also with a company who records audiobooks for a while. Then I ended up working with a friend, but more because I just needed to get out of the house. It wasn't because I wanted this to be my career. I just wanted out. It was like prison. And then finally, after maybe 15 years after the stroke, I saw a commercial on YouTube for a nutrition course called Wild Fit. And I thought, I don't need this because I already have a really, really good diet. And I've been playing with my diet for a number of years. And I didn't think, frankly, I could or would gain anything. And then I thought of that plateau, and that was as good as it was going to get. I enrolled in the course anyway, based on tuition. That was the only reason. And then I rationalized it by saying, well, whatever, I'll just learn something new about something I already like.
Okay.
And then 3 months into the program, things started changing. Like, I was the weight. I was in high school again.
Wow.
I had tons more energy. I was like the Energizer Bunny. It was.
Brian.
And I just felt better than I did in my 20s, pre-stroke. But then the real magic started happening 6 months after into the program, basically, because I continued living the principles I had learned in the program. And all of a sudden, here I am, going hiking. I could have never hiked in a million years prior to doing this program.
I mean, so where do you, I mean, was it big mountains or just kind of general hiking or?
No, like not huge, but it was a moderately difficult hike.
Okay. So, yeah. So from hike, what did you, so 15 years, 40, you're obviously now in your 40s. Did you go back to find, what kind of job did you go back to or finance or what were you doing or?
No, then I realized, oh my God, I found the Holy Grail. So I decided to become a coach.
Okay.
For that program that I took, that changed my life so much.
So you're a coach, you're doing the, regarding nutrition of the coach, of that, that's really, because obviously you've gone from being, you, in fact, let's go back a little bit. I'm guessing with being, not being able to do very much, I'm guessing you must have put on a lot of weight, I'm guessing.
I did put on weight, yep. And my new favorite food became ice cream.
So I'm guessing you're like, I'm just saying, I've got to move from the sofa at some point. but that's brilliant that you managed to lose, you managed to lose all that weight and become a coach and basically helping others, which is what you, so how, I'm guessing you do that full time now.
Yes, and you know, the weight was the least of it because it wasn't the weight that was inhibiting the movement. It was everything else. It was coordination. It was balance. Excuse me. Balance. It was so many things. So many things. And one of the magical things that happened is my voice had always been really breathy, like Marilyn Monroe. Like really just...
Hoarse.
And one day, I recorded a video, and then I go back and watch the video, and I was like, oh my God, is that really me? And I could not believe it, because all of a sudden, I had bass in my voice again. And this is 15 years after a stroke. And what I believe happened was my left vocal cord must have been semi-paralyzed because of the stroke. And through this nutrition course, it actually got better.
That's good.
Yeah.
So have you always had a sort of a hoarse, a voice that's a little bit hoarse, or is that kind of, no, because of the stroke?
Yeah, it wasn't so much hoarse as breathy. It was really breathy, and there was no bass.
Do you still find it's breathy? I can still hear that a little bit as you're kind of maybe, it seems that you've got a cold maybe, but not quite.
Yeah, now my voice is still obviously not what it was, but I call it my sexy voice, my bedroom voice.
Did you phone me at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay. It was you, right? Okay. Luke, just reflecting on all that you've been through, because nobody expects to take medication and suddenly just your whole body goes into stroke and having to basically start your life again. Just tell us a summary of that period in your life. Be as open as you want. Just Yeah, it's going to affect you in many ways. It's not just going to be just the going through it and the physical therapy and getting back into it. It's just, as I say, I know I've said it earlier in the interview regarding psychological part, but just give us a summary of how you really just felt deep down and really how just the coping mechanisms and how you dealt personally, because we all have our own coping mechanisms and things and how we deal with things and how we bring ourselves to a better place so we can without sort of either burying our head in the sand and completely giving up. So I'm guessing it must be times you really probably just wanted to give up. But you obviously, tell us the things that made you fight as well. So, yeah, just tell us a little bit about that, how you felt.
Like I mentioned, they really, if it were not for my family, I would have thrown the towel way in the beginning because I went from an independent person flying all over the place, wonderful career coming up, and all of a sudden my life was changed 180 degrees. Total, I became helpless. I became like a baby, but in my 20s. That's what it felt like. It felt like going through toddlerhood, but with a conscience. And it really was horrible. And I would not wish it on anybody. But that said, I also would not take it back, because it has made me who I am today. And as much as it was a hellish experience that I would not go through again.
Okay. So looking, going forward now, you obviously you're a coach for nutrition. Well, looking at your obviously your goals going forward, obviously what's your kind of aims and what things you want to try and improve in your body, obviously due to the fact you're not fully 100% but functioning, but obviously what things are still not working quite right, and what is your sort of goals going forward, and what do you want to achieve still going forward and best part till this year and maybe going into next year, or have you got like a 5-year plan or something?
Yes, I don't have so much as a 5-year plan. My goal is to eventually run. Right now I have a bad ankle, so that's not happening because of the ankle. But other than that, I think it's very possible and very doable. And that's my wearing heels. I also want to wear heels again.
So what part is of your body is still not quite working yet? Obviously, you're 90%. So what's the 10% that's not quite kicking in yet?
I would say just not being able to run.
Right, okay.
And my voice. My voice is different than it was. I don't know if that's going to improve or not.
I can see it as you talk. Just by obviously, for those who are listening in the audio version, if you ever want to watch it, go to YouTube. I can see, even though it has, because your speech, it's slightly, I try to describe it, it's like the same movement if somebody who had had a hard of hearing, people who are deaf, but the sort of slight movement that they, it's a similar sound, if you know what I mean, as they speak, because it says it's that kind of movement. If I'm probably not explaining this very well, but you probably get what I'm meaning. I don't know, but it looks, I'm probably making a complete hash of this, but I probably, but it's, yeah, it's like that almost. It reminds me of watching you on camera, but just and listening to you, it sounds a little bit like that. But obviously, yes, that's obviously, it's a side effect. It's probably very similar to, obviously, we are having a stroke, and obviously, people who are deaf and they speak very similar, sort of maybe however the body works, you know what I mean? So, but you get what I mean.
And I'm also very animated when I talk. So,
yeah, I suppose with deaf people, they are animated if they don't have, because that's what they do. If they can't hear, they animate. It's just it's something you do to describe, animate things to. Due to the speech to subsidize the kind of describing things kind of thing. So
yeah,
I suppose it's like when somebody asks you for directions, it's like you're not gonna, it's trying to give directions like using your hands. Just you use your head, just turn up that way, turn left, turn right, go. I mean, you can't help not use your hands and point, so it's that kind of thing, you know. But yeah, so tell us just What, anything, final words you might want to say to people that just due to what you've been through, people who might be experiencing the same thing, who might just any warning signs or just kind of, yeah, how to challenge something challenging.
There was really no warning signs for me. However, what I will say is that whatever's happening to you, you are not defined by your circumstances. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. And I feel like that's what I've been able to do. And I want to inspire others to do the same. And also, I would be very mindful of what your diet is, because we have been led to believe that food is food. And it's very not like that, because if I can recover 70% in 8 years and then 15 years later recover another 20% just by changing my diet, what is it that we don't know? So there is another way.
Okay. Where can people connect with you if they want to get in touch with you?
You can visit me on my website, genuinelymaria.com. That's G-E-N-U-I-E. I forgot how to spell it.
we'll have the website in the show. We'll have the website link in the show notes for those who want to connect. We'll be able to. We'll have all that there. But yeah, so don't worry about it. Is it pronounced the website? Don't worry about spelling it.
Genuinely, Maria, and I can't spell it. I was like, I had a deer in the headlights moment.
You're having brain fog, literally. Yeah. So it's genuinelymaria.com.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. So it's genuinely and M-A-R-I-C-A. I'm trying to spell your name. I'm looking at your second name. It doesn't really quite work. Trying to spell your first name, but looking at you. Anyway, so yeah, please check our website, genuinelymaria.com.
You can also book a free strategy session.
There we go. Free strategy session, and you can have a 30-minute chat for any kind of thing. So that's good. So we 30-minute chinwag, maybe you've got a podcast. You want to get on your podcast and talk about her some of that, or maybe you're health wise and how changing a life has benefited her to onward upwards to get that full 100% and to be able to run a race again properly and many more. So. Yeah, well, I want to say to people who have been watching, listening, who may be watching YouTube, LinkedIn, or Facebook, who may be listening to the audio purposes, be Maria Garcia, originally from Spain, moved to New York, and we're just simply talking how simple birth control medication caused her to have a stroke. And you would never think of, wow, there we go. You'd never think of something so simple just to controlling, getting pregnant. Would cause you a major life change, and over the best part of 15 years, it's taken her to get back to pretty much full health again and able to function and do this live normally. So, as I say, as watch what we eat. It's easy to eat rubbish, and it's easy to just we are what we eat. Technically, as the saying goes, and it's easy enough to it's so easy just to eat junk at the rest of the times and try not to eat healthy. But let's make this as a good positive guidelines. If she can change her health through her diet and get back to full fitness just about, we can do the same. So obviously there's no excuses basically in her life. But I hope you enjoyed being on the show.
Yes, it's so much fun. Thank you, Fraser.
No, thank you for. I've only had to reschedule this about 20 times. It's not too. I'm not too. but tell us just briefly. What part of actually New York are you in? You're still in the same place, Manhattan, or?
No. I'm in New Jersey.
In New Jersey,
right next to New York.
Right, yes, cool. So how do you? I'm a bit of a. Just tell us briefly before we go. What TV stuff do you watch? TV much at all? Are you a TV fan?
I actually don't own a TV. I don't own one.
Okay, so ever, I'm a bit of a, I have to say I'm an addict to your kind of FBI, New York and all that stuff and all the events and all this. Yeah, I'm never off watching these programs, but it's all good. But anywho, listen, let's just want to say thank you for being on the show, and we got there in the end, basically. But as I say, just so genuinelymaria.com is the website. We'll have that in the show notes. You can connect, and we'll basically you can touch base with Maria anytime. And yeah, thanks for being on the Ramsay Unleashed Going Beyond Borders podcast all the way from New York and connecting you to Scotland.
Thank you very much. Sure. This is great.
I know it's been good. Well, listen, to everyone who's watching, wherever you are in the world, take it easy, have a good one, and we will speak to you soon on the next one. All the best. Bye for now.
Bye.